Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Battlestar Galactica, the final season, with our guests from the Galactica Quorum. For more information and news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com. Welcome, everybody.
Hello, my geeklings.
Ladies and gentlemen, Geeks On.
And it's a new year. We haven't done a new one right now. I get confused.
Immediately after our big to-do about how we're going to get more regular with our episodes, we took a month off.
Well, part of it, I thought we would do like a big Day the Earth Stood Still episode, and then I saw the movie. And there's no reason to big Day.
We could do a Day the Earth
that
Stood
would be
Still,
the
original, which would still be worth it.
You're right.
Yeah, but if we did it based on that movie, it would be the Day Geeks On Stood Still.
Right.
You know, pretty much.
That bad?
It's just boring.
It's really boring. And Keanu Reeves doesn't say whoa once.
You know, the original is a slow film.
Right.
But this just doesn't
have the international anything. It's an intellectual slow film.
Yeah, this is not so much. So, anyway. See, we just did the episode.
Done! Moving on!
Hi, my name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Hollywood, and I'm a geek.
Hi, my name is Pete Robinson, and I am a screenwriter and director here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
Hi, my name is Donald Marshall. I'm a video game professional and a writer here in sunny Hollywood, and I, too, am a geek.
And I am Matt King. I am an actor here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
And we have guests.
Many of them.
Ooh.
Hi, I'm Brian Pinalto. I'm a web designer and the host and producer of the Galactica Quorum podcast, and that alone makes me a geek.
Hi, I'm Michelle White, and I am a graphic designer, and I'm a co-host of the Galactica Quorum podcast.
I'm Ted White, Michelle's husband. I am a network engineer, which makes me a geek.
Yes, Galactica what? Quorum has very little to do with it. He was a geek before he came in. He's a geek when he goes out.
So welcome, folks. And as our listeners might have guessed, you are here to fill us in on the wonderful world of Battlestar Galactica. And we have actually tied Matt to the chair.
Yes.
And we will be forcing him to listen to all of the spoilers that will be coming up in this episode. And boy, will there be spoilers. Yes. So for those of you still on season two, go away.
Season three,
this
like
is
me.
Season one.
Or you know, season one.
This is not the podcast for you today.
No.
Yes.
Not, yeah.
We will,
this is not the podcast you're looking for.
Spoilers.
We will
spoilers.
Warn you when you should turn it off.
Yeah.
How about that?
So you can amuse yourself for the first 10 minutes, 15
How about
minutes.
When Matt walks away,
yeah.
You walk away.
If I manage to lose myself from my bonds.
You know what I would love? I would love it if we actually put out two different versions. One where, like, you know, we have all content, and one where, like, we play the girl from Ipanema over all spoiler content. You know? Geeks On will be right back after these messages.
Our show is freaking an hour and a half long.
Okay. Maybe people really like
when
girl
it's
from
short.
Ipanema.
Yeah.
All right. How
Don't
about some,
judge us, Aaron.
How about some geek news?
Excellent.
Okay. So cue the music. Oh, I love that music. It's awesome.
The miracles of editing.
All right, so we're going to do some geek news. You guys feel free to chime in when you when you'd like. Who's going to start?
All right, well, mine as a tribute to Ricardo Montalban died this week. Very sad.
And in tribute to him, all of us will perform his most famous line at once together. One, two, three. Go!
And that actually happens to be what my news story is about.
Oh, did you get that email, too?
I got the email. It's how many A's in Kant.
I got this.
And I'll put a link to it, but there's a chart that Google search results for Kant, where A equals X. X equals a value from 1 to 100. There's a real spike of A's around 40 to 50.
Right. So they charted on this graph... Between 100 and 1, how many A's search results there were
for Kahn?
And it's pretty funny where, like, the sweet spot is
exactly.
on that.
So there is a general consensus on how many A's there are in Kahn. I'll find out the exact number, but...
Right. We should get the script to find out the truth.
Exactly. That's a good point. It may just be like Kahn.
Yeah.
But William Shatner was being William Shatner.
I would guess 8 to 10 in the script, just because you can't have like a 40.
Because otherwise it would have bumped over to the next line.
Not even just bumped over to the next line. It might have just jumped a couple pages there, you know?
You know, that could have just been Khan, and then Shatner could have just taken the lead with that one.
Oh, God.
I know. I thought that was a pretty interesting
Can
article.
You imagine being a writer having to give up your scripts to Shatner? It's like, oh, God, what are you going to do to me?
By the way, do you guys check out Google Trends at all?
No,
you're the maven.
If you go to Google and do a search, there's a tab in there that says trends, and you can just hit it, and it will graph that search you just did over time, how many searches were done, and any spikes or valleys will plot a news article that might have been related to the reason why it spiked. It's very cool, and you can do
That's
any search. Not only that, but it will break it down to region, so you can see who did the most search results for, you know, that category. Now, remember, the government was tracking flu results. It's the same exact thing. If you type in, you know, flu, you can see what state did the most searches for it yesterday.
That's really interesting. It's like, North Dakota's really into Japanese schoolgirls.
Yeah, well, it's funny. You can also, you can type that in. You can see that search result. And if you, you can also put in two, and it will, if you put in like Star Trek and Star Wars, it will compare them between countries. And it's amazing how low the United States falls in some of those.
You know, you could really find out some creepy stuff that way.
You could find some really
creepy. You could be searching for like the GIMP from, you know, Pulp Fiction and find out that like North Dakota really is into the GIMP. You know?
You should try it. You get some really interesting stats in it.
North Dakota's like super kinky, man. Yeah. What's up with that?
Immediately, I started thinking about it as an actor is that you could find out where your fan base really is.
Yeah.
And sort of specify to that fan base. Like, go hang out in the North Dakota Mall. Why is it North Dakota?
You know, picking on North
Dakota.
I could
just see Matt online like, wow, my mom's house is really busy.
Like, what's going on? Like, yeah. Like, 16,000 hits. My mom's just there, click.
I told this to somebody else, and they started freaking out because they thought that that might be intrusive because Google is tracking where these search results are coming from.
Right.
And we've kind of decided that the granularity of the result is where it becomes like if it went down to state, I'm fine with it, and even maybe county. But if it started like getting down to street level,
1423 New Hampshire Street,
yeah, that's when it becomes intrusive. I think it's the granularity of those statistics is when it goes from privacy to interesting content. So anyway, I just wanted to bring up trends.
Excellent. Next.
Well, I have a very sad news today of the first video game related murder of 2009. And we're going to pause for a moment while we close the door. The door is no longer ajar.
It's now a door again.
So my news story is the sad news story of the first video game related murder of 2009. A preacher's son killed his mother and winged his father.
He didn't wing him. He shot him dead in the face and his dad.
He shot him dead in the head?
Dead in the head and his dad lived.
Oh, I missed that. I just saw that his father lived. When his father banned him from playing Halo 3, and as he escaped the scene, the only thing he took from the house was his Halo 3 video game, which he removed from his father's gun locker along with the gun.
Have you seen the picture of this kid?
He looks psycho.
This kid ain't right.
No. Let me be clear. We are not talking like, oh, Halo made my son a crazy man. No. Like, Dr. Seuss made your kid a crazy man once upon a time. This kid has, like, some long-standing issues.
Yeah.
And probably his parents. Oh, most of these problems boil down to parents.
I'm sure they probably didn't help the whole gun locker thing, but...
The gun locker preacher. The gun-toting preacher.
Hold on. Okay, I just have to point out. The guy was a gun owner who kept his gun locked in a gun locker. I mean, that's the responsible thing.
Yeah.
Giving your son the code to your gun locker when he is clearly mentally unstable, perhaps not the right
thing. The kid is not right. The kid is most definitively... I mean, he could be from central casting for Deliverance. Yeah. The kid was not right. Was definitely... Like, you can look at him and go...
Yeah.
Yeah, the kid, I mean, visibly was like... oh, he's the child that plays with cats in the wrong way. So, I mean, so
that's funny. You can laugh.
So he's like from Children of the Corn, basically. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Don't little, pick on Malachi.
Little, Malachi.
Yeah.
So has there been any like video game backlash yet?
I don't know.
Not really.
Because
actually,
if this is Grand Theft Auto, is it just because it's Halo 3? Or.
Well, they're trying to tout Halo 3 as the most, you know, most violent video game ever. But honestly, when you look at, like, you know, hell, Left 4 Dead, my current addiction, Halo 3 is like, that's like a kid's game. Like, my granny plays that, you know?
Do you guys, video game players, any of you guys?
Yeah. Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. What's your current obsession on video games?
Just finishing Fallout.
Nice. Fallout. Nice. I'm trying to do everything.
How many hours have you been playing it?
I think I've got 30 in so far, 35.
Oh, I think I've got maybe 5.
No, you're about 15, actually.
You think I'm 15?
Yeah, yeah.
I refuse to play Left 4 Dead because it scares me.
Yeah, my wife
wants to. It's supposed to.
I just lent it to Matt, and his wife is just not happy about it at all.
No.
I was playing.
Nor is Dagmar.
I was playing with Lisa, who's on the show sometimes, and it was one of the best experiences ever because you can hear her over the mic going, "Oh my God, there's zombies everywhere! Oh my God!" And I'm like, "Okay, go check around that corner." And you say, "Okay, I'm going around the corner." And there's this pause. Then you just suddenly hear over your microphone, "Ah!" And you see her character backpedaling, shooting at the sky as zombies are coming after. It's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, you don't live very long when you play with her, but it's a lot of fun to watch.
It's so much fun. Who cares about winning?
All right. So I got an article. Belkin's development rep is hiring people to write fake positive Amazon reviews. There's a Amazon.
These guys keep getting caught.
Okay, now, is this a thing? I always wonder when I'm looking at positive reviews on Amazon or something like
yes.
that. How general.
They
you
all
know,
do it.
Okay.
I'm sure they all do it.
Here's the biggest.
This guy just
here's
did it
the easiest way.
Way
to tell. All right, I'm going to be completely blunt because I know this for various reasons that I won't go into. But if you go to the Amazon website, check the publication date on the book, and then take into consideration that often the book is not going to be ordered until the day of publication date. Not many people pre-order most books, like unless it's a huge like George R. R. Martin hit or something. If the review comes within the first 2 days of publication, chances are it's from the publisher.
Huh.
That's all I'm saying.
That's a good point. Well, basically, Amazon.com runs a little side business called Mechanical Turk. And the way Mechanical Turk works is basically people can go on to the site.
Mechanical Turk?
Mechanical Turk.
And how odd.
They can get hired to do small tasks for a couple bucks here and there, things that you can't really automate a computer to do. Okay? So on this site, this guy goes on, and you make, you know, between a penny to a couple dollars per task. So this guy goes on to the site, and he finds this thing that says, write a positive 5 out of 5 review for product on website. Positive review writing. Use your best possible grammar and write in U.S. English only. Always give 100% rating, as high as possible. Keep your entry between 25 and 50 words. Write as if you own the product and are using it. That's the best part. Tell a story about why you bought it and how you're using it.
So this is like bad book reports.
Yeah. Thank the website for making
you such
a great...
This is my very, 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 very favorite product. Yeah.
Thank the website for making you such a great deal. Mark any other negative reviews as not helpful once you post your own. So he looks at this and he's kind of like, okay, this is kind of interesting. So he does a little research, and it turns out that the guy that's doing this is Michael Bayard, who's the business development representative at Belkin.
Okay.
And he's doing it for a product that, if you look at all the other reviews, say is buggy, has serious problems, consistently bad reviews. And what's really interesting, though, is that Mechanical Turk is owned by Amazon. And he's having them rate the Amazon reviews. He's using Amazon's own service to fuck it over.
Wow. I mean, you could say it's a conflict of interest, but, I mean, really?
Come on, we all do that.
Yeah.
How many people have gone to, like...
Geeks On and rated Geeks rated On as I... the best podcast ever!
Peter, I'm... shocked. Shocked, I say.
Who would ever do that?
No. Yeah. And I notice our BSEG guests are so quiet on this subject.
Never.
No, he's talking about...
Yeah, so...
Brian's turning pink.
Shave off a couple of the... You know, I always ignore the star 5 ratings for most products.
Yeah, always start at 4 and below.
Well, I actually start below. I want to see what all the problems people are having.
Yeah.
I'm already interested in the product. I don't need to see the rave reviews yet. I start from the bottom, and I see what everyone's complaining about. And usually you can disregard a lot of them because there's some dumb, you know.
The packaging on this game was stupid.
Yeah, exactly. So you can, like, ignore half of those things. But some of them say... A few of them are saying this doesn't install correctly. Like, there's a lot of iPhone apps. They say this does not install correctly and crashes. If I see too many of those, I'm not buying it. So.
Actually, the ones that I like are the ones that give positive reviews, but when you look at it, it says these are the problems with it still.
Yeah. Right.
That's when I know that it's like a real review.
Right.
Although now I've given them the hint.
All right. I have a news article here about a love potion under development.
Ooh.
There's a research...
This sounds like one of my news stories. What are you doing?
Because this is one's real.
Oh, okay. Sure it is.
There's a neuroscientist in Emory University who's discovered a chemical that he believes is responsible for what he calls the abnormal inclination in humans to be monogamous. Because all other mammals are not. I don't know why he thinks humans are.
Well, okay.
I mean, come on.
Well, wolves are monogamous. Geese are monogamous.
Usually, though, it's like 90...
Actually, wolves are monogamous with air quotes. They do have affairs with each other when possible.
Sluts. But anyway.
Sluts.
Anyway, he has found... I guess he's doing studies on autistic and schizophrenic people, and he's found this chemical that makes mammals monogamous. And he thinks that in the near future, this could actually be developed into something that you could give to humans, and it would make you kind of have greater attachment to someone you love.
Did you see the study that talked about the fact that true love does actually exist? That they found, they did this, okay. Chemically. They did a test of, I think it was 2,000 couples, mm-hmm. and they basically found that certain couples, when shown the picture of their spouse, mm-hmm. even after 20, 30 years that these couples had been together, mm-hmm. they had the same reactions as their test group, and the test group was people who had just then fallen into love. They were within the first 3 months, and they found out that there mm-hmm. were certain people within that test group who still reacted as much, if not more, with their current spouse, and they basically said that the chemical release was the exact same. They were testing it across. Hmm. It was fascinating.
Well, maybe this is connected in some same way. Maybe it's...
Wonder if you could market that in a pill. True love, TM.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is if this does...
See, that's scary to me. What if, like, someone's stalking you and, like, what's that bounty hunter in Clone Wars? The
Boba Fett?
No, the
IG-88 Bosk.
The one that Clone Wars. The one that changes faces.
Yeah.
Oh,
him.
I didn't watch the Clone Wars.
I don't remember.
I can't remember.
Him. Scream it out in Geekland. We'll hear you eventually. Go.
Okay. You know, you're walking down the street and all of a sudden, oh, it's a start in my neck. And you turn around. Oh, after a moment of disorientation, you're like, oh, hey, I like you a lot.
Exactly.
And then you get another one in your neck. And then you're really confused because it's like, oh.
Yeah, they say like you could use it like a roofie, but it's a little more friendlier. Yeah.
Mm.
Instead of, you know, making them all... kind of dreamied, they actually just fall in love with you.
I'm telling you, if that drug actually comes out, it's going to make crack look like Sanka.
Really? I wonder if it would just be a pill that married people would just take.
But every time you see a strange couple after that, like, you know, people that just don't look like they belong together, everyone would be yep.
They're on love potion number 9.
That's love potion number 9. He totally...
I'll bet you that could actually create a resurgence in arranged marriages.
I don't know.
To avoid it?
No. Arranged marriage is because you can go, all right, this person is politically expedient for me to marry. They're wealthy. You know, they have all of the sociological benefits in a partner that I want. I just don't love them. Boom. Done. No problem. Now I love you, Grampy. You know, you're 87 and a guy, but I want to marry you, you know, but...
If you gave it to a homosexual, could you...
Make them straight.
To be straight.
It could be a new treatment for
make,
things that
it
don't
could be
treatment.
Another gay pill. You could do it the opposite.
Sexuality becoming increasingly liquid in the next
All right,
20 years.
I'm done with that article.
All right.
Okay. Just a quick fun announcement for me, being a Terry Pratchett fan that I am. Terry Pratchett must now be addressed as Sir Terry Pratchett,
yes!
because he's been knighted. Yay! He's actually been knighted not just for his contribution to English literature, but also because of the amazing work he's done raising awareness and funds for Alzheimer's research in the past 2 years. So, yay, Terry Pratchett. Congratulations.
All right. Sort of akin to Aaron's story, in Potsdam University in the south of Berlin, we have started a flirting class offered to German computer geeks.
Ew.
The 440 students enrolled in the master's degree course will learn how to write flirtatious text messages and emails, impress people at parties, and cope with rejection.
Is this topped by that MTV guy who has that show about picking up women?
Oh yeah,
the pickup artist. Mr. E.
What's his name?
Mystery.
Yeah. Mr. E.
Yeah,
that's.
Yeah, Philip von Sneftlenbleden, I can't pronounce his last name, an author and radio presenter who will teach the course, summed up his job as teaching how to, quote, get someone else's heart beating fast while yours stays calm. So he's
just
the...
Just get the pill.
God. Did you take a course? No, I'm on the pill. There you go.
Is that it?
No, I have just one more. It's not really a news story, but just an announcement. Apparently, the Watchmen court settlement didn't go to court. They actually settled.
Oh, really?
And the details aren't out quite yet as of this reading.
They're not going to let the details out. I think they're going to keep it quiet from what I understand.
Well, we'll see how long that lasts. They're going to take their settlement to the judge, and the judge, I guess, has to approve it and look it over. But the biggest detail is Fox is not getting any of the
distribution rights,
and they're not going to claim
Whoa.
Any. So whatever deal, I'm wondering what they gave up. Another franchise?
I think a lot of money, actually.
Well, part of that, you know, they might be this guy Larry Gordon, who was the producer, got this movie made before
right.
the actual. I think they're trying to get him to pay for a lot of it. Which really would suck because that's a lot of money.
I hope he's insured.
Well, if he makes the film and it goes through, he'll make it back, you know. But
him personally,
I don't know
about that.
Not if it's related to percentages of profits.
True.
Anyway, so we will be seeing Watchmen on March 6th, I think. So those of you who are worried, you don't have to be.
Yeah. Also, just final little note: the flight of the first algae-fueled jet went on. And this is dead true. U.S. airline has completed the first test of a plane partly powered by biofuel derived from algae. A 90-minute flight by Continental Boeing 737-800 went better than expected. One of its engines was powered by a 50-50 blend of biofuel and normal aircraft fuel.
Oh, so, God. I'm sorry. I thought you said a U.S. air, meaning the jet that went down in Hudson. Immediately,
yeah.
I'm thinking, that didn't go so well.
Yeah, exactly. No.
Hmm.
And they've said that this biofuel basically is the most promising because they can just you can grow it on the coast and it just grows in a day. It has just one of the highest growth rates imaginable. So they're hoping that they
that's not going to get spin out of control.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Killer algae.
Steve Jobs stepped down from Apple for several months due to health related issues,
which may be permanent.
We'll have to wait and see. Yeah, he's waiting to see if they can get his health back on track. So
yeah.
Hmm. Well, why don't we move on to our discussion topic?
Alrighty, so our topic today is Battlestar Galactica and the newest season. Battlestar Galactica. The newest season and what we expect in the future.
Golly, if we only had some experts in the room who could tell us all about Battlestar Galactica. Oh, wait!
Wait a second.
Hi, guys!
So Hello. Before we start, could you guys tell us about who you are and what your podcast is, so we know.
We do a podcast called Galactica Quorum. We are near the DC area.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing it for about 2+ years now. We basically are just a bunch of friends at work who just started talking about it, and it grew into this thing. And so we now take trips to conventions like Dragon Con, and out to we're actually here for the BSG prop auction
mm-hmm.
that's occurring. And we're meeting lots of people. We're traveling to different places. And
what's the format of your podcast? You go through each episode?
Well, it's funny. We've been doing it for 2 years or so, but
most of the show's been on hiatus or off-season for the majority of it. I think literally about like 75% of our shows have been during the off-season, which has really been tough.
What do you do when there's no Battlestar Galactica to discuss? Well, what happens?
Or what are you going to do when there is no more Battlestar Galactica to discuss?
To the first year, and it was a year, we talked a lot about theories and people's, because we had a big cliffhanger at the end of that first season three, I think it was. And we had a lot of people asking us theory or sending us their theories and just ideas of what could be in the future. And there's lots of things to talk about. It's probably not in the Lost level of, you know, stuff going on, but there is some mysteries involved. And
I think Lost podcasts have it a little bit easier because there's so many Easter eggs and, you know, secrets. You can talk about it forever.
Yeah. And so we did that, and then we started to go to conventions, and we started interviewing people on the cast. And then we got a little bit of a reprieve because the Razor movie came out, and they did some webisodes, and that gave us a little bit more nourishment to feed off of for a while. And so then we had the last half season. Season four started. And then we were off for a long, long time. And by that time, I was worn out. I was like, I can't talk Final Five anymore. I'm done. I just was like, I gave up.
How accurate were you guys in your predictions of Final Five?
Well,
Brian,
I got it on the nose.
On.
Yeah. Really? Even up to the most recent episode?
Yes.
Really?
I have a documented.
He has a year's worth of him saying who it is. And you're going to make it into a little...
Don't say it yet. We'll give a spoiler
alert.
I have not yet left.
In about 15 minutes.
I don't know how you would have been so accurate. That was such a hard call on that last one.
Yeah. The last
The last one, I was so far off.
Believe me,
it's
we
not
had
even
so
funny.
Many people sending us stuff, and after you aggregate all that stuff together, you're like, you could go in a few directions, and I was like, wait, I think it's either this way or it's this way. And if it's this way, I'm pretty sure it's Person X.
Hmm. All right.
All right.
Well, we'll
so
talk
now,
about that
man,
later.
You should
I'm
have
curious.
Put some money down on that. You know,
yeah. I Does left. Vegas have odds. On,
I don't think so.
Battlestar.
I bet. Listen, there are people that will bet on anything.
That's
you know?
True. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
All right. So I left the series the moment that Starbuck comes back.
Okay.
Right.
So you've got basically 12 episodes that you're missing, which a lot does happen.
Okay.
Right.
So as soon as you guys feel that red zone of that area approaching. Start pointing.
Okay. Yeah. But first, why are you here in L.A.?
For the prop auction.
Okay, and describe what that is.
The prop auction, the show is, it wrapped back in June.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually did another movie in August. And as soon as the movie was over, they struck the sets and they started storing them. And they brought them here for them to sell off to make money for Universal, I guess. And
I thought it was a charity.
Some of the items are for charity. Yeah. Like Trisha donated her sixth dress. They went for, I believe, $13,000.
$13,500, thank you. And I don't regret spending a single penny on that. And I think it looks smashing on me.
Yeah, so her charities were for a lot of like animal charities, PETA and stuff like that. So, but there were some, yeah. But I believe most of it is just between Universal and...
Oh, bummer. I thought it was all charity.
It's really too bad.
Did you get anything?
We were going to bid on something, but the thing he wanted what ended
which
up
was the dress?
No, I wanted one of the dresses.
The two Carathrace's two little statues of the gods of Kobol.
Oh, right.
They were saying it would probably go for between $500-$600. It went for $3,900.
Wow.
Whoa.
So two little, you know.
He didn't even get to raise his little paddle either.
Yeah, it was very upset.
Someone went off straight out.
Well, three people went off straight out. Right when they said 100, three people were like, yeah.
And then it quickly went to like 1,500, and then the auction network came in. It's an interesting event because they also were doing, broadcasting it live, and they were taking bids from the auction network in real time.
Right.
So there was a, you know,
that's cool.
Yeah, there's a bank of people with laptops watching the auction network
and would they
raise their hands up when someone online was bidding. And it was a little frustrating for us in the room because a lot of the higher end, you know, top dollar items were going to people online. So, you know, you were bidding against one guy that really, you know, was standing for everyone online.
And you want to see who this person was.
Right. You really want to stare him down and give him grief.
You really bought that.
Hunt them down now, later, hit him in the head, steal the statues.
I think I will be stealing the logs.
I went over there to see the props and costumes over there. I saw you guys there. There were some large items there. Yes. There was a full Viper, a full Raptor.
Dude!
And actually, I think there was a... Wasn't there... I think there was a couple Cylon ships that were at least in the auction.
They were too big to get into the building.
They could not get the Cylon Raider in the door.
So...
What would you do with it?
Well, what would you...
Record a podcast from inside the Raptor?
Nice! World's best playhouse.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, first of all, because it is a podcast, they don't have to know you don't have it.
Okay.
Second of all, Photoshop does amazing.
Right. Do you guys know what any of those went for?
Oh, that's surprising.
They actually did not. They were hoping they'd go for a lot more. They did not hit the reserve, so they did not sell. The Raptor petered out at was it $30,000-$40,000?
They were hoping to get between $80,000 and $100,000.
That's
right?
What they're hoping. And then the Viper came in at $25,000, I think, and the Cylon Raider was $30,000.
Yeah, people didn't bring their checkbooks for it seemed.
I mean, it's essentially you would have to get a museum or something to really...
Well, I talked to the guy who was running it, Alec Peters, and he told me in an interview we did about a month ago that there's different Raptors out there. There's like a stunt Raptor and there's the hero Raptor. That's the one that we saw at the auction. It has all the blinking lights inside. It looks really cool.
The interiors are all, you know, it's pretty cool.
It looks really cool. But there's a stunt one that he sold to a collector in Germany, I think he said that. So there are people out there with the means to buy them and ship them and whatnot. It'll find a home. He said that they'll find a home for them.
In this economy, I'd be lucky if I can afford a picture of a Raptor.
Yeah. I think the lowest item in that whole thing was like they were expecting to go from like $200 or $300, and those were like things that hardly even look like props for Battlestar. There's like, this is a salt shaker, and I'm like, well, it looked kind of like my
this
salt
is a
shaker.
Genuine table.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got some pictures, and I got the book with all the... I'll show you guys some of the stuff. Maybe we can post some of the pictures. But
Starbuck and Hilo work out at my gym. I wonder how much I could offer auction that off for.
What gym do you work out at?
Starbucks there too?
Yeah.
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, I thought it's pretty... some of those props were pretty cool, and they're very detailed. I think, high definition has gotten the prop department to have to invest a lot more work than I mean, if you've ever seen old Star Trek props, they are garbage. Yep. Like
even the Star Wars ones that used to be at the Smithsonian a while back, or it was a traveling thing where they had the Star Wars props. You look at them up close, and you're like, that's just junk.
Yeah, and tape. These were very detailed. Like, the scrolls were amazing, and the books were actually filled with maps, and you can see that stuff now on TV, so it was pretty cool.
Yeah. This is not a spoiler, but it's mini spoiler, very small spoiler. In the last episode, they're burning a certain prop. It's a book. And I'm sitting here thinking, oh my God, how long did it take to put that thing together?
Yeah.
And how many of them did they have, so they could make sure that when they did it, they got it right.
Well, with the person burning that book, I'm betting one take.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. See, that's actually kind of like it's not like a spoiler. That's actually like a, what happened? Now I got to find out type thing. A teaser.
Exactly. All right. Before we move on to specifics, can we just discuss, for the people who haven't listened, why we're Battlestar fans?
I think that's in your domain, Aaron.
Yeah, considering that you were so...
I think you're the convert. So
I was a whole...
You're the jihadist.
Those ships are bullshit, man. They're bullshit.
The Raiders are pretty lame.
Oh, I laugh.
From a design point?
The big eye in the front that looks like the... I mean, come on.
Oh, come on. You didn't complain about it when Kit was doing it.
Kit, are you kidding me? That's one of the worst television shows on the face of the planet. Oh, it's such a dumb idea.
They're all robots. Why would you not just put a head on
it? It's just doofy looking.
Okay.
A big head in front of... I don't know. You guys like I think it's a stupid design.
It looks like a cockpit to me.
Anyways, I saw half of the miniseries, and I'm still not a big fan of the miniseries. I thought it was an hour show stretched out to be, maybe an hour and a half show stretched out to be like, what is that, 3 hour?
3 hours. Once
3 hours. And so I kind of just left it at that. And I was then
bludgeoned,
convinced to start with the series.
Gently urged,
we tied him up. We held him with you know those things that hold the eyes open.
Clockwork orange.
We did that. We held his, you know, had to vise his head so he couldn't turn his head, and we forced him to watch it.
Yeah. And you know,
and when he saw Boomer, all was
Boomer in a minute. But but I you know, for me personally, that the series, episode one of the actual series, is showed what I like about Battlestar, which to me is I'm able to identify with their problems. I'm able to identify with the characters. They're taking pretty much our society and knocking it down to 40,000 people and then testing it. And they're testing with all the problems that we have now, but it's heightened because they're, you know, such a small group, and
it's truly good sci-fi. Is that basically they say, all right, they put you in an extreme circumstance, and then they test your values in an extreme circumstance.
Right, exactly. And that came up over and over and over in the series, and I thought it was very smartly written because of that. I think it has lost some of that recently. I think it is not as grounded and down to earth as it used to be. And that's some of the thing I'm regretting a little bit about how the story has turned, but we'll discuss that later. But in general, I think Battlestar Galactica has been a great magnifying glass on the things that we care about. And I think that's what's important. And I think it's not just random, Starship Atlantis or whatever that show.
Stargate
Atlantis. Yeah. You know, it's just not episodic, you know, random BS. So.
I think there are a bunch of gasps out there in Geekland
right
now.
I know. There's fans of it. I get it.
How dare you?
I like Voyager. I get it. So,
I have to say, I agree with your... They went from... My biggest gripe has been, and I've said this on our podcast, that the Cylons are not as scary as they were in the beginning.
That's definitely true.
And that's my gripe with Terminator as well. The Terminator is not as scary as it was in the beginning. And it's just, I liked that, like, on the edge fear that they were going to come and get you. And it's not like that.
Or even mysterious.
Right.
Even if you didn't
necessarily,
like, Terminator type of feel, there was this mystery that was frightening. But, and that is also completely gone.
But you have to ask, the series is ending. Do you want to end on a mystery, meaning that this mystery will never be resolved, or do you want the completion of, like, now I know the story?
Well,
and to watch the early portion of the series, now knowing what you do, within a whole new context.
Well, you know, I feel like the show creators need to decide what they want to say about their series. This is what I think about as an artist should do. And then answer those questions. And if a mystery on the other subjects could be still a mystery, you know, there, we don't have to know the complete plans of all the, you know, bad guys. As long as what is being said about your show is resolved, I think that's a successful series to me.
So you think they could have kept the Cylons as being a little bit more dangerous, the questions being asked being a little bit harder, and still maintain the plot?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest disasters of that whole show was showing what the inside of a base star is. I mean, it was just this disastrous. It's just a bunch of bickering, you know, they act like high school students on there. They're bickering, and then the interior is not as cool as my imagination went wild. Oh my God, what is the inside of those crazy things? When you get there, it's
all tranquil.
It's a little too human.
Yeah, you know, and
if it was a little more like something out of The Matrix,
but there's,
you know,
nothing they could have shown me that would have been the whirling and twirling going in my brain. There's nothing that they could have designed that would have been satisfying.
Which is why they went the opposite direction. They went just very empty.
They
dark.
Should have done nothing. They shouldn't have ever. I should have never seen the inside of that ship.
Should have been like the original Battlestar and just been an empty black room with a
I don't want to see the inside of the ship. I want it to be a mystery.
No, I think it would have been cooler if we did see the inside of the ship, but it was something they'd put a little more care into it so that the design was something much more foreign to
the expectations of a human being. I mean, we need space.
I just disagree. The premise of the show, and this is not a spoiler, is that the Cylons are created by humans. And everything that is created by a creator reflects its creator in some way. By going into the ship, we're exploring the fact that, yeah, the Cylons are reflections of us. Mm-hmm. They are an extension of us. They're a different step. Their interface, like for me, the thing that I thought was really cool is seeing the interface with the computer that they do. Unlike us, where we want to remain separate from the computer in the Battlestar Galactica reality, they didn't go into the jack-in. For humankind, they don't do that. Humankinds are still on keyboards and mouses, you know. But over in the Cylon, they put themselves into the computer. Their consciousness submerges, and they go into the hive mind of the ship. You know, that to me is what's foreign. That to me was what was interesting. I don't care about the design elements. For me, that I didn't really care, and it what they did worked for me.
I'm just saying, every time they do something like that, they're taking mystery away.
And I think it was necessary. For me, Battlestar Galactica is the Dance of the Seven Veils, right? And if you don't get rid of that seventh veil at the end of it, if I don't get my money shot, I didn't get what I invested in. And yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Okay, I can't believe you just used that analogy.
I'm along with it. I'm on the train.
Everyone's blushing.
I don't know.
No, I agree with that. I agree with both of you. I mean, if that's possible. I was disappointed with
the
reveal of the Cylons.
Welcome to the fence.
But he's right. I don't think we could have had four seasons of 33 episodes where it's just constant attack. Because
I totally agree.
But I don't think we would have got the level of the allegory that they're building into this big story. I just don't think it would have the complexity wouldn't have matched, I don't think.
I have to love about the show, I mean, look, you know, they don't succeed at everything. I mean, there are some episodes that are just not as good as others.
Right. And that's fine.
But
Gang Boss Black Market episode.
Yes. But what I love about the show is that it consistently tackles really interesting topics. It's not afraid to go for broke. You know, in a couple cases, the studios pulled them back from things, which has been unfortunate because I think it would have been even better if they'd gone as far, you know, even further. And I also love the fact that most of the time what happens is not what I expect. I don't see things happening. You know, like they take the things that people expect to have happen, and then something else happens. And even if it's, like, bizarre, even if it throws you and you're like, what the hell is going on? And it's kind of weird. It keeps you engrossed in it because you never know what is going to happen.
I think they've made some great choices at the end of seasons. I think maybe we should start calling spoiler. If you haven't seen the series, we're going to start talking about it.
All right.
Heavily now.
So, spoiler alert for seasons 1 through 3?
For sure.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Matt has not yet left the room.
Right. For example, going to New Caprica and essentially feeling like, you know, skipping 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I think that shocked a lot of people.
Yeah.
It stopped the series down a little bit. There was a flow that essentially stopped. When you fast forward 2 years and all the plot lines, you know, between people kind of end or...
The fat suit. Pulled,
we have fat suits.
Well, I actually felt like that was...
You should see the look on her face.
Were you disappointed
that?
With...
First off, I really hate Apollo. If he were to randomly disappear off the show with no explanation, I'd be perfectly happy with that.
What? Really?
Yeah.
There are certain podcasts that
But he's
are
so pretty.
No, I don't
Apollo,
care.
Well, Apollo favoritism, and there's some that are Hilo favoritism, and there's
it's
like
all Hilo.
But we're more the Hilo side. We bash Apollo a lot. We're the we
really.
Yeah.
Is it because Jamie Bamber's actual accent sounds really, really light and effete?
I don't think they write. I don't think they write Apollo.
What is it that cool turns you off about that character? I'm just curious.
I don't think he's a good character. He's wishy washy. Yeah. He whines a lot. He's like Luke in New Hope. I just don't like him.
Okay, I see him suffering from like Cyclops syndrome from the X-Men.
They needed
very much. So.
I'm generic leader boy.
Very much so.
They needed one or two repeated just over and over. And just
they needed one or two badass episodes in order to save him. Like, they needed to show him at least once or twice being a total badass so that we could at least go, well, but actually, I think they needed that with Starbuck also. They always talk about how much of a hotshot Starbuck is in a fighter jet. I don't think I've seen that maybe more than once.
Really?
Well, I think I like three or four episodes that I've seen where she's
where
been,
she's a total badass.
Yeah,
in
the
only like when she goes and like yeah. pilots yeah. the Raider back. And
I'm going to go against you on that one.
That's kind of like an engineering feat more than anything.
I think we've seen some of that with her.
Actually, piloting the piloting the Raider back is singularly one of my least favorite episodes of BFG. Yeah, because I was like. Really? Suddenly you just go in and you go, oh, no, no, this membrane does it, you know, like, yeah, really? And then you're going to take it through hyperspace.
Right, exactly.
It stretched my, you know, and I'll jump on the wagon for just about anything. And I was really like, oh, yeah, yeah, this is the neural optic sensor here, this mucus membrane.
On, I think maybe I was still in the Starbuck can never do wrong phase where I was like, she's the greatest. So, okay, I buy
we started
that.
On that,
the
too.
One that really killed me was when they plugged the hole. She plugged the hole with her jacket and then took it into space. That was really great.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. I completely forgot that.
They're strong jackets.
Yeah. There's.
It's a bio ship. It healed.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I used to watch Robotech all the time, right? And there's this one episode of Robotech where basically Rick and Minmay are trapped in a part of the ship. And they see a gigantic 12-foot-long fish floating outside of the ship in space. Mm-hmm. And so he takes his flight suit, puts on a motorcycle helmet, tapes up the bottom of the motorcycle helmet, and jumps off into space to get the fish, bring it back in, and they have a meal. When I was a kid, I thought that scene was completely moronic and like, really? Come on. And so anytime I get like what I call Rick Hunter fish moments, I'm like, there's sincere problems. And like Starbuck with the thing, that was a complete Rick Hunter fish moment.
Yeah, yeah. So.
But I feel like there's a certain ebb and flow to the strength of the characters in the series. And Apollo, I'm surrounded by Apollo haters, right? Mm. I don't actually like Apollo. I want his ass. Apollo is not my favorite character, but he fulfills a role in the series that needs to be done. And that role is a boring role. Like, no one wants to watch it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
I don't know. I always thought he was almost, of all the characters that could disappear, he would be one. They spent a long time trying to find a niche for him. He was the hot pilot, but he wasn't hot pilot because Starbuck had that role. And then he was the rebellious son, but
rebellious.
And then he became the politician. And well, it took four seasons to do that.
As the rebellious son, he was more interesting. Once he became the politician, it became less interesting because there are a lot of politicians in the show, too. But you're right. What would be great would be to see something where, you know, him with a gun, like, kicking down doors.
The thing that I found very interesting is talking about the ebb and flow of characters. The character that I thought was so central to the series, the Sharon character, the Athena one specifically on board, has so slid to the back seat in the past season. It's like I occasionally forget, and Hilo, I occasionally forget that both of them are there.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's been very interesting. And it's not that they're not central. It's just that nothing's going on.
Mm-hmm. And they made such a big deal about her daughter, and now you hear nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, don't get me started on that.
Well, the things that
I wrote a haiku about it.
Okay. I always thought that the principles on the human side of Battlestar Galactica sort of represented what was best or what was specific about a specific human characteristics. Like Laura Roslin, I always felt was the brain. I mean, she's always ahead. You know, Adama is the will. Starbuck is sort of the physical, the ability. And I always was thinking that they were trying to go with Apollo. They were trying to make him into the heart. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the movie Gattaca? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a moment in the movie Gattaca where Ethan Hawke basically says, you know, he's fighting against his brother who's genetically superior. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, we used to race. We used to swim across this lake. And there was one time where he beat his brother because he knows that, you know, rather than having to swim back, his brother gives up. He just continues to swim on a shorter distance to the other shore, mm-hmm. you know, but because he has this knowledge, he knows he can give everything that he has. Mm-hmm. And I was always hoping that would be what they would go with Apollo, was that he's not necessarily the best pilot. He's not necessarily the best politician, but he is never ever going to give up. Mm-hmm. And I never felt like they followed through with that with him.
Right.
Like that he was just absolutely, once he was on something, he was going to bite onto it and never let go.
He was the loyalist.
He was the loyalist. He was absolutely, you know, through to the end.
And they try to do that, I think, a little bit. He is the one, he only defies his father because he's the one that sees true.
Right.
He says, I am here for the good of us.
But it was always petulant.
Mm-hmm. No, I get it. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah.
But some of that is the acting. I mean,
I suppose.
All right, let's talk about. Let's
Luke,
talk about
New Hope. It's a good analogy.
Yeah.
Let's talk about.
I was going out in my Raptor to get some power converters.
Let's talk about season four. Let's talk about season four.
Okay. Have we reached season four?
I think we're going to talk about season four.
All right. At this point in time, Matt is leaving the room.
All right.
Matt
this is,
King if you is have leaving
only,
the building.
If you have only seen up to season three, leave now.
Bye, Matt.
Bye.
For your listening pleasure, as Matt leaves, the girl from Ipanema.
All right. Love you all. Mean it.
Bye. Okay. So, beginning of season four, we've had, what, 11 episodes? 10 episodes?
Okay. Now, are we discussing up to the most recent episode?
Well, no. We're going to discuss up before. We're not going to discuss the last episode yet. Let's talk about the first half.
Okay.
Do you count the movie Razor? Because in their nomenclature, they count that as 401, 402.
Yeah, we'll throw Razor in there.
We'll throw Razor in there.
Because Razor's irrelevant except for the hybrid prophecy and all that stuff.
So. I agree. What do you guys feel about the last season and the direction it went? Kind of in a general...
The first 10 episodes? I felt that they could have used another season because the first 10 were crunched so much. And it wasn't bad. It just... I felt that... There was a lot of... The progression went really quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every time someone had a revelation, like, their reaction to it felt so rushed.
Yeah.
Like, but we could have gone through a few more phases on this.
Like, did you feel the Starbucks trip on the Demetrius, that was 2-3 episodes, and one of the episodes was, like, the last 5 minutes of another episode, and that could have been a little bit stretched out more. I just felt that...
Do you feel like they could have just, though, cut out some of that stuff and just made a more kind of clear path to where we've now... gotten instead of dragging it out more? Like, I felt like there was a lot of running around and back and forth. Like, where I found it, I found the way to Earth, and now I'm don't Losing really know. Earth. Like, the season before that ended with her saying, you know, I'm back and I can get us back to Earth, and then she can't. Mm-hmm. And for so long, we went through this kind of weird... I didn't even think that she acted like herself. Starbuck, she's totally turned into a different character. And then there was just kind of this long, dragged-out thing that I didn't feel like was heading anywhere.
I don't know if we can, like, answer that, though, because a lot of what came out of the first half of the season is, you know, the strengthening of the relationship between the humans and the Cylons. And the Cylon civil, you know, dispute. Mm-hmm. And I... don't know. I mean, I have a feeling that's going to become even more important in the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's since you bring it up, what do you guys think about the Cylon civil dispute?
The most interesting thing I think about the entire last season and a half, maybe, is that one of the things they mention that is different between Cylons and humans is their value of life is different because they can be resurrected. Mm-hmm. And there's a moment in which that changes because they destroy the resurrection ship.
The only resurrection.
Yeah, I have problems with that too.
Yeah, I do too, but just to make things simple, I guess maybe they, you know...
I have actually theories why there would be one, but...
So...
Well, I think there are more than one resurrection ship. It's just the one that they have with them, they have access to.
They did refer to it as the resurrection hub.
Yeah, they made it sound like
a network.
Made it sound like the entire.
True. Yeah, that's true.
The entire Cylon race has changed from that moment on.
Yeah,
and the change was that they're mortal now, and they have to think differently. And I think that was introduced into this revolution, which is now they have a different way of thinking about life and how they fit into the grand scheme of things. Other than that, I'm not even quite sure, including free will, because now some of them released some of the lower end models to have free will. So the Centurions were essentially slave
units. That was one of my favorite. I really liked that part. I liked when they explore something that's interesting, like they were lobotomizing raiders. I mean, I thought that was really interesting.
I thought that was really interesting.
and they start reacting to their, you know, they have to say please.
I thought it was unfortunate that that happened all in one episode and then they kind of moved on.
Yeah, I do agree.
Again, with the rushing that Brian mentioned.
Yeah, I thought that was so
important. That could have been a half a season.
I actually felt most all of the Cylon stuff was the stuff that got cut out. Like, mm-hmm. I felt like everything on the Cylon ship should have been extended.
Mm-hmm. Well, they could have explored it a lot deeper than
The Civil War lasted one episode as well. That's what I mean. They could have just... I don't want to say stretch it out. I just feel like they just...
So much depth.
I'd have liked to see more of the conflict, too. As the blood and guts but, sci-fi guy I am.
But don't you guys feel like it took that long for the writers to actually... You know, the opening of the Battlestar... episodes, everyone since the beginning says the Cylons have a plan. Don't you feel like now that maybe the writers didn't know what the hell that plan was? And don't you feel it kind of took that long for
actually,
us to get into...
Actually, I have to disagree. I know we're not talking about the latest episode yet, but there was one key revelation in the most recent episode that made me go, oh, shit, they've been planning this all along.
Well, okay. In fact... Yeah,
I have something I was going to say in contrary to that.
I read an interview. I found out who the 13th Cylon was by walking by a magazine that said it on the front. I was like, oh, man.
Wow, that's shitty.
Yeah. I glanced at the magazine, and the person said that the person knew for the last 2 years that the person was the Cylon.
Huh.
And had to sit on it for 2 years.
Well, that's fine, but that doesn't mean that there was some master plan developed by the writers. I mean...
Well, no, but the implication is that there is at least a lot more thought, you know, that they're not entirely making it up as they go along.
No, I don't think they're doing that. I think... But as far as, like, having... From the day he set down Ron Moore and started writing even 33, knowing all the way to the very... Or the miniseries, to know at the end, everything. I don't. And the reason I say that is because if you listen to his podcast, often where he talks about the show, he talks over the show like a director's cut or producer's cut sort of thing. At the end of season three, he was saying how they had done different versions of when Kara returned. And one of them was she was in her Viper, as we saw. That was in that cut. Mm-hmm. And another version, she showed up in Lee's ready room or bunk as he was getting his fight suit on, and she just appeared there. And they were like, we don't know what it means, but, you know, we shot it, we didn't know. And so, and I think they didn't quite know yet what to do. And now, as we see this newest episode, which we'll discuss a little bit later, we see that it was a really good choice that they went the way they did, because that explains how something happened. But, you know, because if they had they done it the other way, it would be an entirely different thing. Would they have had the beacon for them to get there? You know, that just all these little dots would not have connected correctly. I think it was really an organic process, and it worked out really well. And maybe just creatively, that's just something that they were moving towards.
Yeah.
Maybe not they were intuiting it, but they didn't know, but that's something they were going towards. But I don't think there was really concrete.
Being a big fan of Battlestar Galactica, of Babylon 5, right? Babylon 5 is a series where they worked out all the details throughout all five seasons before they started writing, and you can tell. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they did that with Battlestar Galactica. I agree with you, but I think the broad strokes were definitely in place. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I'm saying I saw underscored in the recent episode.
I think of like a George Lucas Star Wars outline type of approach for Battlestar.
How dare you?
Yeah, so, lots of glaring going on in the room right now.
I have a haiku.
He's a pilot of Viper.
It's called Cylons Have a Plan. Hera important. She was for three seasons. Writers lost their way.
Oh.
I mean, come on.
Hera is the big hole in my theory. It is true.
I thought that was the key to the entire series.
All of these prophecies were saying Hera is important. Mm-hmm. You know, people are having visions about you are the guardian of the child. But there's no guardian of the child two bunks down that has the exact same circumstances around it.
Right.
You know?
I mean, what is the point of... I mean, for three seasons, that's where it was going. And then they just did a flip-flop. I don't know.
Well, she might still be key, and they're just maybe they're trying to throw you off the scent.
I think she will
maybe.
Maybe
so. I think they are.
She is the one that's been in the Opera House visions, and it's funny they go episodes without ever bringing stuff back up, and maybe that's purposeful because they want you to kind of forget things for a while. And the Opera House hasn't been brought up in a long time. Well, maybe not. And it's hard to say because, again, 8 and 9 months goes by and it's harder to figure out what really time is. But the Opera House had her in the vision. I don't remember seeing Tyrell's child in any kind of vision. So I think she still plays a part. But again, you're right. It's like Tyrell's kid's in there now. And that the Hera was a key component. And it was really just dropped for a long time.
So before we get into this last episode, which we've all seen, the last half of the season ends with the Cylons and the humans essentially making a truce. Half the Cylons making a truce with the humans, kinda, and decide to work together, and they find Earth. And then we get to Earth, and we have this big reveal at the very end, which is they're on the planet of the apes, pretty much. That they're on a destroyed Earth, and it has been obliterated by some type of war, which was not really surprising to me that there was something like that was bound to happen. Especially
we got half a season to go,
right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we knew we didn't want a Battlestar 1980 all over again, so we couldn't come to like.
I could definitely see Starbuck going over some dunes in an ATV, and
yeah, why not bring it back? But the capes,
yeah, capes, all about the capes
and the motorcycles.
That's what this show needs, more capes.
So, what did you guys feel about that cliffhanger? Was it shocking, surprising?
I wasn't surprised.
Yeah,
not at all.
I don't think anybody was.
But I loved it. I mean, it was...
It's kind of what it needed to be if you were going to reveal Earth at this time.
And also, I mean, if you take what you know that final reveal is and you extrapolate out what happens in the next episode, which we're not going to talk about, but I just want to say that the look that they've got for the planet is just beautiful. I mean, I just love the look. It's
washed out white.
Really powerful, vivid imagery. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just don't think you can end Battlestar with happy-go-lucky. Like, yay, we're on Earth, we're all happy, we're going to settle down, it's great.
Yeah. Well, the key thing for me that made me say that this was not done yet was, well, one, we had 8 episodes ago. And two, the prophecies. You know, the prophecies have been so sort of tied in, and the prophecies were not fulfilled when they reached Earth. So... Yeah, I mean, more things that have to happen before they reach the happy place.
And what is left open in the prophecies at this point? Is anybody keeping track of that?
President's got to die.
Yeah.
What is that? Anything else?
Starbuck is supposed to lead them all to their death.
Mm-hmm. No. To the end.
Yeah. No.
No, it doesn't say death. It implies death.
To the destruction or something.
We've done this so many times, I can almost do it verbatim. Starbuck will lead the human race to its end. She is a harbinger of death. They must not follow her.
Okay.
And we've talked about this so many times. Like, if you parse each sentence individually, it could mean different things. Like, she's leading them to their end. The end of the journey?
Right.
Possibly. She's a harbinger of death. Okay, well, the Cylons are fighting each other. They're kind of destroying themselves. But then you get to the next line, which is, they must not follow her. So, that sounds kind of bad. So, I don't... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but, my prediction is that what that means to me is when they find their final destination, Starbuck is not going to rest, and Starbuck is going to keep traveling off on her own. It'll be like the adventures of Kara through space, you know?
Well, okay. What is it that... Should we discuss this last episode, or should we just leave it alone?
I say we discuss it.
All right, let's discuss it.
Time
spoiler alert
it.
For
spoiler
people
alert.
Who haven't... The final spoiler alert. You have to have seen the entire... series up to this point,
which is the first episode in January 2009, right, where they reveal the fifth Cylon, the final Cylon. Right.
So we start with them on Earth and having to deal with what they found there and their journey. Mm-hmm. They thought was at an end.
And for me, I think this is where they got back to what we were talking about as far as great sci-fi goes. Like, yeah, the actual situation they're dealing with is beyond our comprehension, but I think everyone can understand working for something, you know, working towards a goal that is just taken away from you.
The obliteration of hope.
The obliteration of hope. Mm-hmm. Dealing with despair.
Yeah.
You know, the final moment where there is no future.
Yeah, this felt a little more like a old Battlestar to me. They weren't as heady, although they they're starting to get into this metaphysical stuff that I'm not able to attach myself to. I don't feel like I understand. I'm not making a personal connection to it.
By metaphysical stuff, be specific.
Yeah, I'm really not clear what you're talking about.
Do you mean the Cylon stuff where they're having flashbacks, or do you mean?
I'm talking about. Kara, Starbuck, kind of almost being an angel, bringing him to promised lands. I'm talking about. I'm talking about Cylons existing before they were even invented. I'm talking about maybe a god that might be in this, kind of putting them through a cyclical a life that they will continue on for all of eternity. I'm talking about Gaius Baltar preaching. I don't even know what the hell he's preaching anymore. He kind of seems to change it up. But there seems to be stuff that I'm not able to just personally... That doesn't connect with me in my life, really.
It's basically the whole episode.
Well, yeah, I mean, those things... I thought, to me, the episode was about despair and what you... I think, to me, the goal of the humans was to find some place to live, not necessarily find Earth. To find a place to continue. And I think they put the title Earth on it. And now they've gone to a place that they found Earth, and now they need to readjust. And I feel like this is the beginning of them realizing that they need to find how to continue on, not necessarily find Earth, that those are two separate things. And there's that, this is the beginning of going from despair to needing to find a new way of living. Mm-hmm. And to me, that makes a little more sense, and that's more grounded.
Well, for me, going into the hope, going into, you know, this, what this particular episode was an exploration of despair.
Right.
Despair means nothing if you don't have hope, right, beforehand. So what I was looking at was they were setting up all these different platforms to explore hope on. Religious faith with Baltar, you know, just a sort of a more grounded faith in the president, you know, faith in ability from Adama, mm-hmm. right? And so just as everyone reaches their high points, right, their rock hard foundation on their version of faith, mm-hmm. it's betrayed mm-hmm. on all of them. So I thought this past episode was extremely powerful for me watching mm-hmm. it. I was extremely moved. And actually, Peter and I watched it together last night, and there were a couple key scenes that he and I interpreted completely differently.
For example,
the Duala scene. Mm-hmm. The Duala scene, I don't mean to put words into your mouth, but I think you were watching going like, wow, I don't get that. Where the heck did that come from? Wow.
It took me a little bit to process that. I didn't see it coming at all.
I didn't see it coming.
And my reaction totally to it was, oh my God, that's amazing. And I totally get it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah. I'm with you on that too.
Yeah.
And I think the way they set her up during the episode is that you kind of were like, okay, she's either going to do something really drastic or she's the fifth.
Yeah.
The way they set her up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 100%.
And then, you know, I kind of knew the way that she was going through the episode, I was kind of, as it, you know, she was playing with Hera, and she was at, she, when she went out with Apollo, she had this high moment, and I'm like, oh God, she's going to kill herself.
Well, I thought she was the fifth all the way up until I saw the blood stain on the.
I
had a split second where I'm like, oh, she's the fifth. She's going to reincarnate. Oh, wait.
No, I knew after she had that high moment with Apollo that was the end of it.
Well, also, if you know Battlestar, the way they write it, they always lead you in a direction, and then they go a different direction. So if you're looking for the direction that's the one you're not expecting, that's
I got to say, though, this is one of the hardest rights, the hardest lefts I've ever seen.
I did not see it coming, though, at all. I was like, are they going to get them back together again? I was really surprised. You know, and I was like, huh, this is interesting. I wonder where this is going to go. And then it was like, boom. You know?
Well, they picked a perfect character to do that with because she has always been the kind of innocent. She's always been, in fact, she was the one.
She's been hope.
She's been hope, especially with Apollo. She was the one that kind of brought him back from despair. Mm-hmm. And to have her be the representation of the loss of hope for the entire fleet, she was kind of carrying that entire burden as a character or plot point, and showing what the fleet's condition was amazing. In, I thought it was like the perfect person to do it. And there's hardly anybody who I think feels I think she's a liked character, and I think you should kill off liked characters. Mm-hmm. I think that's like the best thing to do is kill them off. If someone loves a character, that's permission.
We're pretty much out of liked characters right now. We got Hot Dog left. It's like the last one I could think of. Oh, God, Hot Dog, run! Don't get in that Viper again, man! Don't do it!
This episode reminded me a lot of the episode where Callie died. It was...
Yeah,
she had a very moving episode, and at the end, when she died, I felt that was very powerful as well. And I went and I checked just to see what the credits for the episode was, and I was like, is there a common theme? Is it writing, directing? And sure enough, the director was the same, Michael Namkin, and he also directed the episode in which Starbuck, quote, died, the Maelstrom episode, and he also directed the one in which Cat, another minor character, died, the Passage.
So maybe
so he has one more episode coming up in about a month. So be prepared.
Oh, my God. Hot Dog, call in sick that day. Call in sick. Every time this director shows up, someone dies, man. So they run.
They give him all the death scripts.
Yeah, exactly.
That's hilarious.
Well, he's good at him.
Yeah.
He's definitely good at him. Even Cat. Like, Cat, I didn't even like the Cat character when we got to that episode. But by the end of it, I'm like, she's a hero. It's so beautiful.
I got to say, one of my favorite moments of the last episode is when Rosalind gets back on the ship and everybody's waiting for her to speak. Mm-hmm. And you're saying, what the fuck is she going to say? Because she always has the right thing to say. And then she's just, the performance there was just amazing. Mm-hmm. I was just like, oh, shit.
And everyone's sick of me saying it, but I love her.
She's great.
I love her.
All right, so now what do you guys feel about this, the five Cylons? We didn't really talk about in the first half of the last season, we reveal the Cylons. I've never been a big fan of that reveal.
How do you guys react to that?
One, I don't get the five Cylons at all.
I don't get it.
The end of last season, we were like, the last cliffhanger, we were like, I guess they've served their purpose. They were supposed to lead them to Earth because they were from Earth or something. The prophecy was really strange. The hybrid saying was very convoluted. But something about the five will lead them to the 13th or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, okay, their purpose is done. And so now I'm rethinking that. I think we've seen them in a previous life or something, and they're being reborn, and so it seems like they have still yet a purpose to play. So when they first revealed these Cylons, I was not happy with that direction of the show per se, but now I'm...
Can we talk about a timeline problem I'm having with this?
Yeah.
Let's say that... Okay, we know that the last Cylon War was 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then before
they were the Centurion types, okay? Humans invented this... Or no, the Capricorns invented the Centurions, okay? From scratch. So they were computers. There was toasters and computers, and there were Roombas, and then there were Cylons.
Mm-hmm.
They then, after 40 years, they left... Then we're to assume that they then develop some technology that allows them to make the Cylons that they call themselves Cylons that look like humans.
I like the way you put that.
Now, did I not hear them say that Ty was friends with What's-His-Nuts for 30 years?
Yep. Yes.
Yeah.
So we're supposed to assume that the Cylons flee... After 10 years later, they develop this thing and they throw it in there. And
but look at the most recent.
Looking at the most recent episode, you have a new context to look at this.
Yeah, which is that the Cylons have been around ever since Earth, and so
why are we calling them Cylons?
Can I share my personal theory on what I think is going on here? They keep saying over and over, "This has happened before. This has happened before. This has happened before." So my theory is that, the Cylons on this planet gave birth to their Centurions, right? Or their Cylons, right? Mm-hmm. So their Centurions rebelled, overthrew them in the war. The planet was destroyed. Centurions leave. They go settle a new place, probably pursued by the surviving humans. Who knows? They settle in these 13 colonies, and they evolve into humans the same way that. So what you see is a repetition. Flesh begets metal, begets flesh, begets metal, begets flesh.
Basically, you didn't say that quite as clearly as I would have liked. Basically, so, the Cylons,
I apologize.
The Cylons created their version of machines, which were biological slaves.
Yeah. Okay.
Which rebelled and killed them. destroyed them, and went off and settled out in space. That was the humans.
Okay.
The humans then created their version of what they were, which were the machines.
And then they rebel.
And they're rebelling.
And so they just go back and forth.
It's a cycle.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they've been saying.
And what they're trying to do...
We're not saying that's it.
And what they're trying to do is they're trying to break the cycle by hybridizing the races so that there won't be one or the other anymore.
That's not a bad theory. I mean, it's not the coolest theory, but it works.
Fine. My theory is not cool. Okay, we just throw that out the cool window.
Well, hold on. Maybe you guys can correct me on the canon, but also we have the 12 colonies, right, over there. But they've never discussed where those 13 colonies came from, which was the first colony. There's no origin of the 12.
I thought they all fled from Caprica. Well, didn't they say they all...
I don't recall that.
From what was the planet?
Cobol.
They all fled from Cobol.
Oh, yeah. From somewhere else.
Cobol wasn't their first home either, from what I understand, according to canon, right?
Wasn't it Earth?
Earth.
They fled from Earth to Cobol, and then they landed on the 12 colonies, and then they want to go back to Earth.
And Earth was the 13th colony because they...
Because it was the first colony.
Yeah.
So...
Don't know.
Maybe.
Why is it so confusing?
Well, but it fits the theory that we're suggesting.
Just small theory. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, with the cyclical nature, the final five are really the final five from Earth Cylons.
Yes.
And they became the first five for, you know, the 12 colony Cylons.
Yes.
So those final five actually invented the Cylons on Caprica and showed the Cylons how to make, you know, people like those first five.
Influenced mankind to make the Cylons.
I think the one thing, though, that is going to be problematic for any of these is that they keep bringing back this guiding hand that's moving things along that's not Cylon, that's not human. There's just
like a god.
There's a something doing, pushing things forward. Yeah. And that's where maybe the final five will somehow do. I almost think that there's Cylons that the humans created, and then there's like these Cylons that are like the final five that are sort of attaching themselves to the human Cylons, the human-constructed Cylons.
Can I share my theory again?
Yeah.
I'm sure I've said this so too many times on this freaking show. 12 Cylons, 12 Olympian gods worshipped by Earth, by the Capricorns, or the people, you know. So my theory has been that each of the 12 Cylons is representative of one of the 12 Olympian gods, and each of them are going to be interacting with the humans, trying to destroy them or trying to save them, whatever, in the manner that god was sort of conveyed. And in the most recent episode, I just would like to point out that if we are to believe literally what is shown in that vision, our Zeus Cylon has essentially ripped the 12 Cylons out of time, out of Kronos, to put them back into the world as the gods they were meant to be, as the
You guys, I'm sure you've heard this a million times, this theory, right? So what's your take on it?
I'm so muddled with theories at this point.
Yeah.
what I think is that what we've seen so far is useless to us. I think there stuff is over the horizon that we have not yet seen that is going to begin to clarify things. Mm-hmm. And I think right now we're probably like in a ballpark area, but I think there's just elements of the story, just reveals about the lore and the history that we just don't know yet. And maybe through 2-3 episodes down the line, something will come up and that'll be more of a clue.
I think
they're holding things really close because when you have that much time in between the end of one season and another, they can't afford to put a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think they've really been backloading a lot of this stuff, and it's going to come at the end.
I definitely feel that we're on the last page of an Agatha Christie murder novel, and like the vital clue you've been missing is just about to be revealed.
Right. But it does seem to me like there is certainly, I mean, you know, Ty is sort of the Odin, the one-eyed all-father, you know. I mean, there seems to be a Loki character. There seems to be, you know, I mean, his wife, you know, he had trouble with, you know.
I'm still trying to figure out who the Indian woman is. Like, she doesn't fit in this to me. I can never remember the character's name.
Tori.
You've definitely got the Huntress. You've definitely got the Aphrodite type character.
Mm-hmm.
You've definitely got the Hephaestus character.
Well, I mean, that the whole simile aside to Olympian gods, I don't know who the hell Tori is. Tori seems to be working off a different agenda than the rest of them to me. Mm-hmm. You know, like the other ones have the other three of the last four definitely seem to have been working with similar thoughts in mind. Not always in lockstep, but she doesn't even fall into that group. And I don't know if that's because she just feels tacked onto the series for me, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. We had a post. Someone sent us a biblical numerology of what all the number models meant. Really highly detailed. It was just fabulous research that went into it. And a lot of them really kind of made sense. I was like, oh, so the two model in biblical terms means this. And it went through each one. And I'll look up and see what the six. Well, we don't know her number, model number, though, do we, for Tori? There was like four that we didn't know.
We don't know any of them yet.
But yeah, so I'll take a look. But
did they post that because of the poster of. The last season poster of Battlestar
The Last Supper thing,
is that where that came from?
It might have been.
Genesis of that?
And actually,
I would love to see that article, by the way.
I'll send you that link. Yeah. But just to revisit that Last Supper picture again, there's a lot of things that happened in the first part of the season that happened, and so we understood some of the significance of the photo. But it wasn't until this episode where Rosalind's burning of the pages, I think, actually started to make sense.
Yeah.
And I noticed sitting next to Adama, he's looking like this. Well, you can't see me in podcast land, but he's looking pensive. And there's an empty space next to him. Mm-hmm. And I took that as meaning that Dee, his wife, was gone. But someone we met this past weekend said that for him was the clue that Ellen was the fifth, because the space also is empty next to Ty, and there's a goblet in front, and the goblet is the device used to kill her. So,
oh wow,
wow, Bob being read,
nice thought. I like that.
Well, to maybe to sum up, what do you guys think has to happen before the season ends, before the series ends, in order for it to be successful?
Wow, that's a.
I mean, to be satisfying and to be a successful series, is there something that has to happen, or is it just? Are you just on for the ride?
You know,
it doesn't matter.
As long as they continue to do what they've been doing, I mean, you know, I actually trust them to. I don't feel actually qualified to tell them what to do, because what they've done so far has made me very happy, and a lot of the choices they've made have never been things I would have done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what I've liked about it. So mm-hmm. I know that's a weird answer, but you know.
And it's hard to say, because I've always felt that after the last cliffhanger, when they reached Earth, anything could happen. The writers could take them in any direction. And I still don't know what direction that's going to be. The last episode we saw, it answered a few things, but we still don't know quite where they're going or what conflicts they will have or things like that. So, yeah, I mean, at the beginning we thought the resolution would have been that they find a place to live. Humanity and or Cylons, perhaps together, they find a new place to start. And some make it, some don't. There's losses along the way, but in the end, they find a new home. But I don't know if that will happen. And if it doesn't happen, I would still be happy, as long as just individually for certain characters that they reach their arc. I guess I just want to see certain characters reach their correct end of their character arc. Mm-hmm. That would make me happy.
It would be neat to me if Ellen starts leading the rival Cylons, the bad ones. Mm-hmm. You know, and okay. So Ty and Ellen are kind of opposite each other and at war. That would be.
I need a conclusion of this Cylon plan and that integration with how that fits into the human / Capricorns. I want to see. It doesn't have to be complete. I want to feel satisfied with the idea that this series had a point,
yeah.
And that there was a master theme.
Actually, there's kind of an interesting theme that if the Cylons are putting the humans through what they went through, that's the only way to ultimately come to some sort of peace, almost like an eye for an eye type thing. That the only way they can actually fully reconcile is to recognize that they've each done the same sin or something. There's something kind of interesting about that.
Maybe. Whatever it is, I just feel like if someone said, oh, what's Battlestar about, I could say, or I could say, hey, there was a great series 10 years ago that explored the idea of blank. And then that would sum up the series. I don't want it to peter out with them saying, well, yeah, we have
all
these big
ideas. Why do you
got to
use the phrase peter out, huh? What's up with that? That's all I got to say, you know.
What about you, Don?
Michelle?
Michelle?
I think I would be satisfied with just an explanation of exactly what the Final Five are. Like, I don't care if they find another planet to live on.
Yeah,
I don't care if they become friends with the Cylons. I don't care about that. I just want an explanation of, okay, the Final Five, they were on Earth 2,000 years ago. They were the ones that created the resurrection technology. They created the original Cylons, and then when they left, they went to the 12 colonies. This is what happened. And I would just want an explanation of how all this happened.
Mm-hmm. I want the plan to actually have been a plan. Yeah. I want it to not feel like...
Yeah, that's really important.
I want it to not feel like, you know, they were writing, they weren't quite sure what the plan was, and then they kind of, you know, stitched it together at the last minute, you know? Yeah.
With the things I enjoy most... I always like the sense of an enormous kaboom just before the ending and then a stillness afterwards, mm-hmm. the calm. And this entire series has been about sustained tension for so long. I mean, that is the series. Tension, pressure, cooking, just trapped. I want to feel that one moment of calm, and whether that's acceptance mm-hmm. of not finding the end, whether that's finding the destination... I just need to feel that moment of stillness for whoever survives.
Yep.
You know, and mm-hmm. I would love that. For me, that would make me very happy.
I also want to know, if the Cylons are machines, why the hell are they exactly like humans? Why can't they figure out some way to detect what these
things are? Well, they can. All of a sudden, they're breaking their own rules. Now they can analyze bones.
Yes.
Like, they're not even following their own rules.
Yes.
At this point. If you can analyze bones, they should have done the bone test.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. Whatever. Alrighty, have we picked
bitter this, much?
I love Battlestar Galactica, and that's the reason why I'm so harsh on it.
Same here.
Oh, yeah.
You know. By the way, yeah, that is true about Aaron. That, you know,
I harsh on things I like.
We
I
get
want
a lot of people emailing us saying, "You guys are too harsh. Do you even like the show?"
Well, that's directed to me because I'm like the critical one in the group.
Oh,
but
that's true.
I just because I love it and I
want it to be great.
I analyze it probably at just a level that's. We used to rag on, well, we still do, you know, Star Wars. We would just go after. I mean, we're the biggest Star Wars fans on the planet up until
50% Star Wars fans.
Yeah, 50%. And then we used to get a couple of people email saying, we're not going to listen to your show anymore because you're obviously not Star Wars fans. And I wrote one of them back and I said, listen, we're more Star Wars fans. We don't accept the garbage that you do.
Yeah,
we expect more from our Star Wars, so I consider myself a bigger fan than you, so don't listen to me. Fine. But anyways, all right, well, before we go, Battlestar's ending soon. You have the Galactic Quorum.
What is the future
podcast.
Of the Quorum?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
you're not gonna do the signal, are you?
No. I bless their hearts, I don't think I could do it quite like that, but Caprica is coming, that miniseries, and then the series is picked up, which probably won't happen until 2010. But and then they're doing the movie. That's the plan.
Mm-hmm.
We'll cover that. But it's coming back to an earlier question. But what we did in the off season, we covered other shows. We did Heroes for a while until I got sick of that. And
Brian has banned us from talking about Heroes.
If only our listeners could see the classic eye roll that came with that. That was a thing of beauty, sir.
We'll do, we cover geeky things, and I'm hoping that we find another show that's really we're passionate about, because we can talk about other shows, but if I'm not passionate about it, I just don't know if I can, you know, muster.
So are you going to officially end it in a nice packet, like, you know, do a Battlestar and say we are going to finish this and not peter out and then start a new one, or are you gonna kind of like
I have no plan, I don't know.
we think
we're going to continue in some manner.
We have to maintain the name So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
I love the name of the Quorum. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, we have.
Well, you could call it the Quorum. Quorum.
I think that's probably what we're going with.
We, you know, there's other G names we were thinking of. There's Geek Quorum and Gaming Quorum. And
right.
So that our email address would stay the same, gquorum@gmail.com.
What other geeky topics were you...
Sorry, could you repeat that a little bit more slowly, please?
gquorum@gmail.com. That's gquorum.
Excellent.
Oh, okay.
Oh, cool. Any other topics, geek topics you'd be willing to explore? You said you weren't into the board gaming.
No, yeah. We are, actually. I mean, I don't have time for a lot of stuff, but it really interests me. I love... I'm one of those people that likes to read up about a lot of things and... Not dream actually do it, but dream about doing it.
Yeah. I do that.
Like the BSG board game, I have it in my possession. I would love to take a crack at it. But
you read about a lot of things, but you don't actually do it. I just
five or six people.
House.
Trust me on this one. Five or six people. So much fun.
Yeah. I'm just imagining. Oh my god! I'm just imagining your house. It's like skydiving, bungee jumping. Yeah. I know all the stuff about how to do it. I just have never done it.
Yeah. Now, so yeah, and like gaming, I used to be a big gamer, but then I had kids and I don't game so much anymore. But these guys game all the time, so I love.
It's because we have no lives.
Getting right. Don't have kids.
About? We have a great life.
You have lives.
Yeah.
So I like talking
depend
about gaming
sometimes
and
three.
We do movie stuff as well.
Bring over Battlestar Galactica to their house.
Right.
Say you're not going to get a babysitter for 5 hours.
Bring the
hours.
Kids. Maybe one of them will be a Cylon.
Yeah. 5-hour babysitter.
I got to kill daddy over the weekend.
How old are the kids?
6 and 8.
Cool.
Yeah. Nice.
Nice. No, you got to get them hooked on things like board games. Mm-hmm. That way you can do it with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some great board games you could play with 6 and 8.
You could play the Zoo Loretto. Is that it?
I would do... Hey, That's My Fish. It's a great game you play with kids.
Also, Ticket to Ride.
Just
don't play Cash and Guns.
They're just getting to the point where they can do Ticket to Ride.
You have to point foam guns at each other, and somebody brought their 8-year-old to play with us once, and I'm like, I can't point a foam gun at an 8-year-old. This is so wrong.
Oh, I could.
All righty. Anything else before we wrap this thing up? What? Oop, hour and a half. On schedule.
Time Nazi.
Oh, come on. Anything else? You guys keep yours down like...
30 minutes.
I know. It's great.
30, 40 minutes, yeah.
Well, we record an hour, and then half of that is crap that we can't use, so...
Oh, we keep all the crap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We just keep...
We just have low standards.
No, I edit the show so much easier. I picture it like a TV show. I like have a director's cut that's like the full thing, and then it's like...
You like editing? You can edit ours.
I guess every show has to have a time Nazi. It's very important.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
He's just successful at it.
Well, the worst part is we actually record our show during our lunch hour at work.
Oh, wow.
So we have to stick to that hour.
Oh, that works
really well. Wow. That's a great idea.
I see that.
Don't even think
that's
it.
That's a great
Don't
idea.
Don't even think
wheels
it.
Are returning.
All right.
Damn you, Brian. What you've done.
Thank you guys for coming and joining us on our show. It's great to have some... you guys are, I think, a little bit more into the details than we are. I'm glad that you've gotten all the fans to send you some of their theories and stuff. So it was great to hear you guys.
It was great being here in sunny California.
I know. Come out and visit more often. You're always welcome on our show.
Please do.
Yeah.
This was so much fun. And once again, for those who are coming in late, where can they go to download your podcast?
GalacticaQuorum.com.
GalacticaQuorum.com.
On iTunes, or GalacticaQuorum.com, and our email is gquorum@gmail.com.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Alrighty. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Have a good geek week.
Geek it out?
Geek it out.
Yeah, okay.
Geek it out.
Ha ha ha!